Welcome to my radio show, Priestess Lily, sacred heart healer, space holder, and spiritual life coach. Hi, I'm Priestess Lily. Welcome. This radio show podcast I have created to help assist humanity rise the consciousness through connection and holding space for thought-activating conversations with heart-centered leaders. Wisdom keepers and divine humans expanding into their authenticity and soul purpose. The sacred vessel is a soulful activation, a recalling, reclaiming parts of yourself that you have forgotten in order for us to heal and walk in the cyclic nature of ourselves, Mother Earth, and the universal energy. Today's conversation is going to be activating. So I need you to open your hearts, open your minds, and I need you to really listen. I need you not to pass judgment or activate your cancel culture, but to see the courage that these women have to want to have a different conversation in a world that is censored. Where asking a question has led many people to be cancelled, where being curious, wanting clarity, seems like we have forgotten this art. Where standing up, using your voice, is now feared. I wanted to interview these three women today, as I felt that their message and what they were asking, the questions that they were asking from the system, has value and needs to be answered. I am with today the beautiful ladies from the Hood, and I have been so looking forward to having this delicious conversation, because I feel that this is a conversation that is really, really needed now, an open discussion, open debate, when there are so many people questioning. And so I'm so honored to be with you ladies. And so I just love you ladies to tell me about the Hood, introduce yourself, and how you really got to be part of this amazing organization.
Okay, I'll put my hand up to start. So my name is Sarika. I guess you could probably call me the founder of the Hood, and director, co-director. I started this because things were very strange out there for the first couple of years of this whole interesting period in history. There was a lot of information that was lacking. We were getting bombarded with a lot of one-sided information. So I guess I started to support and advocate for cases that started to arise after the announcement of the 12 to 15-year-old age group for the jab. And I started to see that there was a real need for information that was a little bit more open, something that we could debate, something that was a little less censored. And so started to put together a website, and in the hopes, and the Hood is actually, it's a part of something like parenthood, childhood, motherhood, you know, fatherhood. It is something, it is a community, a part of. So when you look at our logo, it's very purposeful for that reason. And we have intentions to be much more than what we are at the moment. But basically there we're there to support. And once the jab was looking to be rolled out for younger kids, we realized that we needed to sort of look at doing something about that. And I probably didn't want to raise my hand to do it on my own at that particular point in time, but no one else was doing it. And so through that process, I met these other wonderful people that have come in on board for differing reasons and different capacities. And I'm super grateful. So I will pass that over to one of them to introduce themselves. Oh, I'm a mother of one, by the way. So yes, I'm a mum too. I'm a parent.
So I'll go next. I'm Nicola. I'm a chartered accountant, so professional by qualification. I'm a mother of four children from age 4 to just turned 13 last month. So teenager in the house, dear God, save me. I got involved because I was really concerned. I was really concerned because we were told that this was so mild, but with everything, there's risk. So, my oldest is that child that reacts to everything, absolutely everything. And I had just this fear, this worry that just won't leave me, that we don't fully understand enough. There's not enough data. We don't know about the future. And I worried about the lack of caution. So when I was introduced through a mutual friend to Serica, and actually I was asked to do an affidavit at the time, so that was how I became involved and joined, because it's a cause that's really deep and core into my heart, into my beliefs, because we need to have discussion and we need to have information and data and it to be analysed from both sides, inside out and upside down.
Thank you. And the beautiful Katie.
Hi, good morning. I'm Katie. What did we decide I was going to be called today? I think they gave me the title of legal case manager. So I have been helping out the hood and had the very privileged position to do so. I guess since the inception, it's been a bit of a wild journey. I'm in-house at Voices for Freedom, so I'm their legal helper with all sorts of things. And the girls very kindly donated me to help out the hood. And since then, it's been it's a roller coaster. We've had so much going on with preparing the court cases. And then in doing so, I ended up getting the role of assisting in Australia, the court case there for a similar argument, which is about vaccinating 5 to 11-year-olds. So straddled both sides of the Tasman at the moment and pretty busy, but, every day is a new learning and... Yeah, I guess it's incredible. I was saying to the girls the other day, in my 20-year legal career, and doing commercial law, I've met maybe a handful of people that I would be able to call friends, or you would work with outside of the work. And then in the 6 months that I've been working with Voices in the Hood, that number is blown out of all proportions, and there's a million people now that I've had the pleasure of meeting and know that I could go to for anything. So it's just different.
And Katie, just a quick question. Do you have any children, love? Are you comfortable with sharing?
No, we're still practicing.
Perfect. Absolutely perfect. Nothing wrong with that, trust me. There's so much I want to talk about. So ladies, obviously this is a topic that has been very censored in our airways mainstream, the 5 to 12 year olds, the rollout, the debate, the conversations. Have you been really finding it challenging to hold space and having deeper conversations with people?
On a personal level, not so much, but on a level publicly, if anyone's been following the hood, they'll know that no one was actually speaking for the hood for quite some time. That was a very conscious decision on all of our parts, and particularly on mine. When you've got kids and you've got businesses, you've got careers, you've got social standing, or you want to stay private, you don't want to be judged. So many different things. It's a really scary thing to actually speak out publicly, because it isn't just a conversation at the moment. It is, it is taboo, you know, it is completely and utterly frowned upon. And I mean, not only is it scary to speak out publicly, just because on a personal level, being in front of a camera or over the radio waves or whatever it might be, I mean, that's enough to be scary. But add in the fact that you'll be called names, that people will judge you, they will say some pretty awful stuff. That takes it to another level. But it's also one of the reasons that I think bravery is so important at this point. And it took a lot for me to finally get to the place in which I personally would stand up and speak. I mean, the girls know that that's taken a lot for me. And I'm sure it has for them as well. But it shouldn't be like that. And I think until we all start doing that and actually speaking out and, you know, speaking our truth, I mean, we should not be afraid to ask a question. And nothing, if you go onto our website, nothing that we ask on there is a conspiracy theory or anti anything. It is just discussion. It's questions. It's like, have you read this? You know, what about this? This is a bit alarming, isn't it? Or let's talk about this. It's the way life should be, in my opinion. It's how breakthroughs are made. It's how we move forward as a society, as professionals, as medical industries, scientific industries, that all of those things, it all comes about through discussion, debate, critique. You know, what's wrong with critiquing something? What's wrong with saying to the government, you know, hey man, I don't like this, answer us. You know, how did you make that decision? Why did you make that decision? I don't agree with that decision. Let's discuss this. We are not allowed to at the moment. And I mean, that's a really scary thing at the moment. And it makes me realize that the fear goes beyond an illness. It's gone way beyond that. And it's encroached into our lives, our freedoms, to move around, our freedoms to speak, our freedoms to discuss. I mean, having a conversation like this in a cafe, you feel like you need to have your voice lowered and, you know, you're sort of in hushed whispers. And it's like, why should we? Why should we be doing that? And I think the importance of this case is the fact that we're bringing that to the forefront. We're actually saying, hey, we're parents, we're individuals, we are people, we are New Zealanders. And you work for us and we're asking questions and you're not answering us. So please, hello, could you listen? And can you give us the evidence that you say you've used? Could you give us the evidence that saying safe and effective was actually truly provided? You know, I don't know, that's my bit, but that's the biggest thing for me about this case. It's, yes, of course, there's a win and there's a lose portion to it. And obviously we don't go into something thinking, you know, well, we're going to lose. We want to get our point heard and we want to raise the alarm bells and we want to review what's going on. And this is a judicial review. We don't agree with the decision that was made. We don't agree with the evidence that was provided was sufficient. I'll let Katie talk about that. But really the importance for me as an individual, as a parent, is that we can't sit by and just allow things to remain hush-hush and submit to being silenced and feel bad and ashamed for critically thinking. I think that's something that I want to teach my child. I want her to grow up questioning things. She's creative. I'm creative. That's part of being creative. Creative, whether it be medically or any innovator, needs to question, they need to experiment, and all of that comes with discussion and questioning and throwing ideas around. And I mean, I guess the most innovative people of our times were the rebels. You've got, you know, look at Einstein, who sucked at school, excuse my French, but you know, he didn't do well at school, but he questioned everything and he wasn't afraid to go out there and look at things differently. And look what happens when you do that. And it's a little scary to think that we might be creating a society or a situation for our children in which that's frowned upon. Geez, where do we go from there? We only have a select few people who are allowed to ask those questions, who are allowed to innovate, and the rest of us should sit down at the back of the class with our hands folded and quiet and listen. No, no, that's not who I am, and it's not who I want my child to be, and it's actually not the people that I really love being around. And that's where the hood is amazing, because we have brought together so many awesome, intelligent, questioning, collaborative people. And I celebrate that, and I want to continue to celebrate it. So this court case is not just a court case. It is it has a whole nother level about it. And I welcome the mainstream media to ask us questions. I welcome them to, and I encourage them to cover this, because we haven't seen a lot of that out there either. And so this is where platforms like this are amazing. Thank you, Lily. And I will be quiet now and let somebody else.
Well, we've certainly encouraged the mainstream media. You know, our communication to them has been, you know, reasonably regular, telling them who we are, what we're about, and asking for their input. But back in January, they covered a small amount, primarily because we had our first day in Wellington High Court. But since then, they've gone very quiet with us and haven't really wanted to touch on the subject, whether it's part of this whole taboo nature of not wanting to rock the boat or not wanting to say something that will come across incorrect, or, you know, they'll get their hands slapped from our government for stepping out of line because they shouldn't have. We shouldn't be existing in this environment. Mm-hmm. And it's sad that we're at the point of needing our legal system, and I guess our legal system's designed to help us in this case, but it's sad that we're at this point that we need to use our legal system to say, hi, let's have a discussion.
Hmm. I know that for myself, I first came across the hood, your webpage, as a mother. I have a 7-year-old, and you know, I very much was seeking information around, you know, not my personal decision for me around the vaccine, but my decision for my son. Because that, you know, around a deeper questioning, you know, it wasn't just solely my decision, it was my decision and my husband. So, you know, we really needed to educate ourselves and start looking. We really struggled to find information that was outside the current narrative. And someone actually sent the hood's link to me, where I started to look and investigate and really, you know, felt into it. And your webpage, I really felt, for me, there were so many open questions and so much questions that activated more curiosity within me, more critical thinking, and which really, you know, as a mother and as a parent, I don't take my role lightly. My job is to, especially for, you know, my son 7, is to, you know, ask those questions that are uncomfortable, ask more from, you know, the medical system, ask, you know, I wanted every stone turned inside, upside down, inside out, because for me, this was something that, like you ladies, like, we do not know what the long-term effects are.
Yeah, I think the questions on that site too, I mean, they're really good, even if you don't agree what's being written in terms of what we've put there, they're really good questions to go and ask your own doctor and to use as a basis to start your own questions, you know, and explore. And I know that many doctors can't answer a lot of those questions that are on there. They can't give you the evidence. Even when we've done OIAs and things like that, we often get bounced around and get very insufficient answers. Like, they're just kind of around and around in a circle, and they don't actually answer the question. They kind of insinuate something, but they don't actually give you the nuts and bolts. They don't actually give you the correct study, because it probably doesn't exist. And also peer pressure to do things for your whānau, you know, to do things for others. And I think we need to remember that when we're putting somebody else through a medical procedure, It affects them. And they have to live with that. Now, I'm not saying that parents aren't thinking like that. They're not thinking that, you know, they're not doing it blindly, but maybe they're not thoroughly thinking it through to the same degree, because certain procedures have become very routine in our lives. And so we trust, we kind of, you know, somewhat do as we're told. Oh, okay, we're told we need this, so we're going to do it. And I think this is a reminder to question things and to make sure that what we are told, oh yeah, you should do this, or you need to do that, or you need to protect somebody else, that the bigger responsibility as a guardian, as a parent, is to ensure that there is good reason to do that. And this particular case highlights that zero is not a reason to do that, that there is a real necessity for risk versus benefit. And yeah, I mean, it's lovely that people have real faith and trust out there, but make sure that you're actually putting it in the right hands. And I guess, again, this is a reminder to the government that people are putting faith in you and that you owe these people transparency.
When we think about what our government said when they were being elected, I recall this was meant to be one of the most transparent governments that we have had in Parliament.
We've been told a lot of things lately, though, in the last couple of years, haven't we? I mean, we've been told that things wouldn't be mandated, and we've been told that, you know, all sorts of things. And one of the arguments that's made continuously is that this procedure is not mandated for this age group. But I know personally a bunch of young teenagers that fell into that 12 to 15 year old age gap that went out against their parents' advice, who were concerned and had this procedure done purely because they couldn't get their driver's license, they couldn't go to the movies with their friends, they were excluded from a birthday party, they couldn't do the sport that they'd trained since they were little to do. All of those things, regardless if you want to bandy about the word mandate, once you talk about taking freedoms from children, they don't have the capacity to hold fast. There are some out there that have, and man, they're admirable little kids, and I cannot speak highly enough of parents that raise children that actually are strong enough to buck the system and stand on their own against peer pressure. I mean, that's just incredible. Doesn't matter what you're talking about, a child that is strong enough to do that, man, that's a cool person, that's a cool little human that you're raising. But that doesn't mean that there's anything wrong with the kids that didn't and can't, because I mean, most will find that really, really difficult. You're talking about the foundation of an adult. You're talking about the foundation of a person. And boy, I can say from experience being a teenager, you know, you don't want to be the weirdo. You don't want to be the outcast. And you certainly don't want to miss out. I mean, FOMO, geez, that's not cool. And so turning around and arguing with, it's been argued with us, you know, yes, but it's not mandatory. So what's your point? Well, the point is, regardless of whether you actually make something legal or illegal, et cetera, society or restrictions pretty much does the same thing. And nobody's silly enough to think that that is not the case. Now, how many people, I'm sure everyone knows somebody who's lost their job. I know I do. People have lost their businesses and whatnot. That's an effect of a mandate that we were told wouldn't happen. Now, I've lost faith when we're told that something won't happen, because that's only one example of a situation where we were told something and that has not remained the case. So I guess this is a poignant moment in time in which we can grasp and show people that, hey, we're just going to stand strong here, and we're just going to show you that it's unnecessary and you're not going to sort of push us around in this situation.
I mean, the one thing our government was actually very true on is if you jump in your time machine, go back 2 years pretty much to this point in time when kids were allowed to head back to school, back to their classrooms, to sport, to the community. And they said very, very openly then that kids don't catch it as much. And when they do, it's very, very mild. Now, all four of my children have caught this. And I can tell you as a mum, I watched them sit and play PlayStation, fight, bicker and argue like the four of them normally do, thinking to myself, you guys aren't that bloody sick if you're still arguing like this over a PlayStation game. You know, for them, they experienced headaches and very mild fever. It was one of those things that, to be honest, had I rocked up 3 years ago, 4 years ago to my doctor with one of my children or four of them and gone, they're not well, the doctor would have said, oh, they've got some viral bug that's gone round. You know, these kids always pick up everything. Just keep them at home until they're well and make sure they're getting fluids. See you later. And I'm sure he would have looked at me going, crazy paranoid parent. So for me, I reflect back on that moment 2 years ago where they were trying to give us parents confidence that our children were safe, that this wasn't going to be of serious harm to them. And actually that was the moment where they have actually been, in my view, from my experience with my four, being truthful. And then I look on the other side and I think, would I take risks when I know that this is as mild as I do now?
I think we're also not saying that one size fits all. There's going to be, especially when you're talking worldwide and you're talking about a whole society, there's going to be a child that doesn't do so well. But that's going to happen with a cold, the flu, anything like that. That's actually just really unfortunate, but it is life. And I think for some reason we've now become obsessed with naming everything. We've got all these variants and stuff. And what Nicola says is so true. It's like suddenly we've got names and the name gives it something to be afraid of. Like we literally, oh, that's a viral rash. Well, that's a fever from a virus. Like it was just a thing, you know, like you just accepted that there were these things floating around and it happened and you got through it. And it used to be in the sort of parenting groups online, a bit of a joke, you know, oh yeah, it's just another something, we don't know what it is, but you know, we'll get through it. Now it's like everything's changed and everything has to have a name. And if you go in and you don't know what the name is, suddenly it's now potentially deadly. And it's like, oh wow. And the thing is that if you look at progression of even a new virus, it becomes less and less as time goes by, and we're seeing that. So you know, 2 years on, we're looking at a version, the 2.0 3.0 4, I don't even know where we're up to, but it is decreasing in its severity. And maybe we can sort of drop the fear now and we can just have these discussions. My child also had it. She was mildly sick. She vomited, and that's the thing, is kids seem to get it very differently to adults as well. So most of her friends have had more of a tummy bug like illness, to be honest, but all tested saying they've got it. So we assume that that's what it was. And yeah, 36 hours or maybe 48. And we're done and dusted. And kind of, it's funny because you've got to be in isolation now for 7 days. It's like, wow, you're twiddling your thumbs for the other five that you're still stuck inside. But I mean, that's our supposed new norm. And I think a lot of countries have dropped that completely. And I think that we seem to be a little slow over here and accepting things. You know, other countries like Sweden and Norway and I believe Denmark and whatnot never even brought this out as a thing for kids because it wasn't seen as necessary. And, you know, again, this one size fits all thing. There will be parents who feel that their kids require it, whether they are immunocompromised or they have medical conditions that have them more concerned. And that's fine, because we really are about open discussion and pro-choice. Everybody has the right to make a decision for themselves and for their children. And I think, you know, nobody wants to take that away from anyone. And if you go to your doctor and you explain the situation and they can prescribe you something, you can do that in all sorts of different forms. I think the issue that we have, or I have, is that this is being promoted. It's being promoted as something that you need to remain healthy. Now, where is the discussion about natural immunity too? Because apparently now you need this thing to be healthy. Now, my understanding of an immune system, and I will openly admit I am not an immunologist, but I have done hundreds, if not thousands, of hours of research now. And everything that I've read suggests that, I guess, and the way I describe it to my child is, your immune system's like a muscle and you need to work it out to be strong, you know? And if you continually, you know, hide from things, avoid things, basically do no exercise, how do you become strong? Even if you can kind of take a tablet that makes you temporarily strong for a moment, it's still not true strength. And I'm not saying that people need to go out and expose themselves to deadly things. It's just that this is our immune system, and our immune system, when strong, and when exposed to the gym effectively, it works so much better than anything that we can take to try and prevent it. And how can you state something is something, you know, whether it be safe, whether it be effective, whether it be 95% effective, 60% effective, 12% effective? That all takes time to do. It all takes medical and scientific exploration. And you need to go through many, many years to actually see how many doses of this you need, you know, to what strength, et cetera, et cetera. At the moment, there's a lot of guessing happening, and we are getting assurances that this guessing is accurate. The thing is that every 6 months or even less, we're being shown papers to show that, oh, well, what you said a couple of months ago is actually inaccurate. So I don't like things being spoken in absolutes when we don't have absolutes. So, yeah, that's the one size fits all thing. It's you're looking at people who are being injured out there, and they are obviously of a physical type that is different to the person who's not. Now, I read the NHS. I got very interested in epigenetics and medicine. Medicine fascinates me. I'm not anti anything. In fact, I love it. I love reading these things. It really floats my boat. And the NHS had put that epigenetics and personalized medicine, this isn't if it's the future of medicine, this is the future of medicine. That the medical community understands now that we are so different, and that for treatments to become effective, they need to be personalized. They need to acknowledge that we are not all the same. And how can that be true in one moment and then untrue in another? How can we roll out blanket things that are supposed to be good for everybody and then in the next breath say, oh, well, you had an underlying condition that we didn't know about because you're genetically predisposed because of this? Now, well, hang on. Let's rewind and not roll something out for everybody. Let's do the research, figure out what's going to trigger who, and prevent that. This is okay for you, but it's not okay for you. And then let's acknowledge the people that it's happened to. Let's say, yeah, that sucks, and that did happen to you. And there are a lot of effects that have come out from the new medical treatments that have been put out there, and they're not being acknowledged. And again, that raises another question. Why? We know that when there's a new medical treatment, there's going to be side effects. We know that there's going to be potential for harm. And, you know, often drugs will get pulled from the market because there hasn't been sufficient testing, there hasn't been sufficient data analysis and real world exploration and exploration on people who volunteer to do it. I don't feel like we've been put in a position to that we have volunteered. I don't volunteer my child to be part of an experiment. I don't volunteer her future and any risk to her future. I don't know about you guys, but that's something that I'd really love people to think about.
I mean, for me, as I said, my oldest is the reaction child. So from the age of 5 months, every single one she's reacted to. So I'm not anti any of this. You know, my children are fully vaccinated, but in light of the reaction she had, the last one that she had in mid-November has lasted 6 months. She's still recovering now. So it's not just now for me. She's in an age where the reactions take far greater toll. You know, she doesn't remember what it was like at age two or age three when her skin just bled constantly. But she knows what it's like now. And the hard thing for me now as a mum is, I'm so sorry. No, she shared her diary. And in her diary, she's writing about how she hates her life. What she can't do, because in the worst of it, she had no ability to use her hands. As a mum, I'm showering my 12-year-old and washing her because she can't. But you know what? She openly admitted that she wanted to end her life. And that was something as a mum I had never thought of when it came to vaccines. But now that's the experience that I've had for the last couple of months. I've got a child who's desperately depressed because of the harm that she's been in and because of the pain and the isolation that she's experienced because of her lack of ability to do anything that brought her joy. She was never, ever depressed. She never had these feelings. And as a mum, that makes me weigh something totally different to how another mum would. Because now I've seen the other side in terms of the emotional impact that it has on someone. I'm so sorry. I've actually never told anybody that she shared her diary for me to read. She left it outside her bedroom door. And in our family, our kids have books. So if they feel that they can't talk to us about something, we encourage them to write it. And they'll leave their diary or their notebook, whatever it is, at the door of their bedroom when they go to bed that night. And she did that for us a couple of months ago. And it was just awful as a parent reading those inner deep thoughts of your child and seeing the pain that they were in. So, you know, we talk about the immediate effect of, you know, having a reaction to something. But actually, that's one thing that we haven't talked about is what happens psychologically, mentally and emotionally when you have that as well.
Mm.
So, and of course, being 12, she was caught by the rest of the mandates as well. So for her, she knew that she was excluded from society, even if she could partake, that she had been excluded. So it was really, you know, it's been quite the double whammy for her. And our conversations in our place now really differ because of her, because we know that there's risks with everything, even when we think it's tried, tested, and we know it, and it's been around for 40 years. There's always that one person that has a different outcome.
And that's where the risk versus benefit is so important, because sometimes people will believe that that risk is worth it because you don't know and you're never going to know. And that's the argument that a lot of the medical community will make, is that we can't guarantee that something will happen to your child. But at least in those situations, those things have been around for long enough to be studied so that there is a good understanding of what that risk percentage is. And I think what's really, really hard to watch is that we're watching people put their kids potentially, and actually, to be honest, I'm really actually proud of New Zealand and the fact that our uptake for this particular age group has actually been, in the government's eyes, really poor. Well, I celebrate that because it's not poor, in my opinion. It is, there's a lot of parents reviewing what's going on. And regardless of whether they've decided to make that decision or whatever reasons they made that decision for themselves, there is a lot of caution that is still being used, but there's still a lot of discussion that needs to be had. And parents having being free to have that discussion that that my child was harmed, you know, we've found, you know, I'm privy to discussions that happen in other groups. And there are people out there like New Zealand Health Forum who are collating real stories and putting them in affidavits. And, you know, what's being acknowledged and what's actually being reported away from governmental reports is there's a huge difference. And the thing is that these people are actually going through exactly what Nicola's talking about. You've got people out there who've been injured who are actually permanently damaged on quite a considerable level, and they're being told it's in their head. Or they're being told, you know, I know of people who wanted to take their lives because they are not acknowledged as being injured. They are told that they've got anxiety. They're told that, oh, no, it can't be from that. That has to be from some other reason. And, you know, you don't usually wake up and find that something really extreme has happened to you, whether you've lost mobility or you've suddenly developed a heart condition of some sort. You know, this sort of stuff doesn't happen as readily as it's happening now. Mm-hmm. The numbers, I mean, just look at the sports people out there that are literally dropping dead. I mean, never have we had an experiment of this level, you know, and never have we seen blatantly so much effect from it, but so much I don't know whether I wouldn't say apathy, but just so much denial of what's actually happening. I mean, these companies have been taken to task many times in courts and lost for things like fraud, you know, and all sorts of different dishonesty, whether it be paying off people, you know. It's just research it, look into it, look at these big names that are out there, and then look at lawsuits, ones they've lost and been found guilty of. And then we can start talking about liability. You know, we can start saying, well, hang on, so if this happens to me, can I then take them to court? Well, no, you can't. And the government signed that right away. So you can't. No one's going to take them to task. So let's have a little think. And what motivation do they have to make sure that this data is accurate? Why were they hiding, you know, this information from us? Why did a court have to then force them to release a lot of their data and their information, in which we're still being drip fed? These are all alarm bells that people aren't sort of, well, a lot of people are actually waking up to it. I'm not going to say people in general, because that's not fair. But a lot of people in society still are completely ignorant too. And I get that that's scary to actually potentially have that realization that companies could actually be knowingly putting you at risk. But again, that's where it comes down to our own responsibility to do our homework. I mean, I don't know, as a family, for the same sorts of reasons that Nicola was talking about in terms of some people being sensitive, that's my family too. That's probably what woke me up quite young. I've pharmaceutically injured people in my family, and that was through negligence in hospital. You know, there's all sorts of ACC claims that we've had to go through, and now we review all medication that has been taken, not just this particular new medication, any medication. And that is our responsibility to advocate for ourselves. So maybe this is a really big eye-opener for a lot of society to just sort of open our eyes and start really looking at everything deeply, you know, conflicts of interest, you know, who's paid by who, you know, where is that money coming from, you know, who's answerable. There's a lot out there that we need to be sort of looking at. And you're not a conspiracy theorist for looking at it. You're just doing your homework, and that's due diligence. That's not conspiracy theory. That's just connecting the dots. It's going, huh, so if this guy is paid by this guy and this guy does this, does that mean that they're going to be honest with us? You know, like, where did the money come from? Anyway, I'll leave that alone. But yeah, don't be afraid to look. It doesn't make you a nutcase.
Well, I feel like just listening to you ladies, you know, that's our role as a mother.
Absolutely.
That's our role as a mother. And just with what both of you two shared, like, isn't when that's, I know that for myself, my role as a mother is my greatest blessing. And it's the one thing that outside of being a counsellor, outside of being, you know, Miss Lily's and all the other roles that I have in my life, that's the most important. That's the one job that I want to get 99.9% right. So I need to be curious. I need to ask different questions. I need to dig in deep. I need to get really uncomfortable within my own bullshit, my own belief system, you know, for me to be able to make the best decisions that I feel are fit for us. That's why and I know that for myself, my journey, and I've spoken on my podcast very openly about my journey around the jab, and, you know, my journey and my husband's journey have been completely different. But when it came to my son, we both took our own bullshit outside of the story and really became curious.
I think the other thing too is that, I mean, parenting is a really tricky thing. And I think the best thing about that you can do when you're a parent, and I'm not going to be saying, no expert here, but is own when you make a mistake. You know, like, it feels like there are kids out there being harmed and parents are just feeling so much guilt. You know, and I get that. Gosh, you know, any big decision or small decision, when it's your fault, effectively the way you look at it yourself, or that choice is a better word to say, instead of fault, because it's an awful term, that choice that you made didn't work out. You know, it didn't go the way that you thought it would be, but you made the best decision in that moment, and you made that decision with the best of intentions, but you have to let that go because it's gone now, and now you own it and you do better next time. And there are people out there who got one for their kid, you know, and then have decided not to have any more. There's people who have made that decision for themselves as well. And I think that we should celebrate that learning, regardless of guilt is such a wasted, it's an emotion that is just a waste of energy, basically, is what I'm trying to say. But it can be so incredibly important as a learning curve. And you look at the brave people who are speaking out. I mean, I was contacted recently by a mum, you know, who has a 14-year-old girl. And this 14-year-old is amazing. She's actually allowing her face and her story to be put on a sign and be spoken about. And they've been really, really brave in coming out about that. And, you know, I have so much admiration for that child at 14 to put herself out there, but I've got so much admiration for the mum to actually sort of own what's happened and kind of go, well, this sucked, you know, and now we're going to get up and we're going to help everyone else to realize that this isn't something that doesn't happen to you. It does happen to some, you know, it could happen to you. And we're going to stand up and tell our story. And I think I encourage people to be okay with that. You know, yes, we want to encourage people to do their research. Yes, we want to encourage people to look at both sides and not one source of truth. You know, we want people to look at critical information and whatnot. But if you haven't, that's okay, because you're doing it now.
Yeah.
You know, like, the journey has to start somewhere, and not shutting us down for seemingly being the pariahs of society for saying what we're saying, and actually openly listening and considering that information. That's the first step in being objective. And that's amazing. And that's awesome. And that's, you know, I think Katie actually said it right at the get-go. If we save one kid, mm-hmm. everything's worth it. And that comes down to funding. Nice little segue into the fact that we need to get this across the line. We need to have our day in court, which is June 27th and June 28th, and we need to be heard, and we need people to help us do that. High Court in Wellington is not a place that comes cheaply, but it is something that needs to be done, and I feel wholeheartedly that it must be done and that it's really, really important. I'm sure the girls would agree with me. Katie, do you want to sort of catch us up maybe on where we're at with the actual case?
So where are we up to? So there's been a little bit of, interest. There was the initial case that we had at the beginning of January. So if we just look at the case as a whole, what is being brought up is questioning MedSafe as to why they say this virus in kids is minor, and then approving this vaccine, and then looking at the government to roll this vaccine out to all and sundry. And then to put the government on the spot, because the government's essentially been the mouthpiece for pharmaceutical companies to say, this is safe, this is effective, this has been through all of the ordinary clinical trials. It hasn't. The particular vaccine right now is actually not been through any clinical trial and is different to the one used in the clinical trial, which went with the application for this jab. So it's really putting a spotlight on parents, knowing full well that not every statement that's made by our politicians holds true for law. It was really important for us to bring this, the interim case, because even if we were going to lose it, we knew that we would put the spotlight on the government long enough to stop this age group being mandated. And while they might not be mandated by law, they weren't required necessarily to have a vaccine pass. There were certainly a lot of people that jumped very quickly onto the bandwagon, and we started to see an indication that five-year-olds would need to be carrying vaccine passes. So we hold our head up high that the interim case certainly stopped this age group from being mandated and put that squarely with in the limelight for the government that, you know, they can't mandate this age group. Absolutely not.
It happened the very night, didn't it? We noticed the first sports clubs issue mandates for 5 to 11. You know, the community came about at that point and stood up and said, no, not for this age group. Please don't. We watched these clubs, in light of what was happening and what they were hearing from members in their community, take that step back and say, okay, well, you know, we would still recommend based on what the government narrative is, but we won't mandate.
You girls have blown my mind today. I just want you to know that. And it takes so much bravery and courage just to stand up and ask questions from a system that isn't prepared to deliver it at the moment. And so, you know, just thank you. As in one mother to another mother, to just thank you for your time. Thank you for coming on. Thank you for being brave enough to step out and ask questions when we're in a culture right now that's a cancel culture. Mm. And that's, you know, easier to label people than actually have open debate and become curious. So massive big heart out to you ladies, because I know that this would not be easy work, and thank you so much for sharing your stories and journey.
I think Lily, you might have a question from a comment that Katie's just made now, from your reaction about what was trialed and what wasn't.
Katie, because I didn't know this, and I've been reading a lot of research. Can you?
You needed to read the briefing paper on the 26th of October that went to the FDA.
Oh my God. So just so I'm completely clear and the listeners have this clear, and just so I did hear it correctly, because my mind is just like, I've got happening. The vaccine, the jab that is being administered to our children right now, 5 to 12, hasn't had any trials. Was that right? Or did I not hear that right? Have I just like...
You heard that right. Slightly differently nuanced. The jab that was used in the trial was a lower dose of the adult version that was rolled out to the 5 to 11-year-old cohort of about 3,000 children, of which 2,000 were the were administered this jab. That jab is different to the jab which BedSafe has approved for children in New Zealand. They suggest that it's different, well, it's clearly different from the documents. You can see that there's different chemical compounds in ingredients in the child's version. I think it's 2 in total. MedSafe asked the pharmaceutical manufacturer about this, and the response was, oh, it's essentially a preservative. It's an inactive ingredient. Just for a bit of an example, in the past, a medicine going through its ordinary trials has to be exactly the same as the one that's getting administered to the population, even if it's an inactive ingredient. Mm-hmm. Someone made a good example, which was lead was actually used as an inactive ingredient at some stage, but irrelevant of its activity or inactivity, it's imperative that the same medicine that is trialed is the same one that gets passed through and approved and then used in the population. And that was a massive concern for us. It was the explanation that MedSafe received from this pharmaceutical company was, oh, well, that's all right then. Well, is it? Has it ever been before?
So it was the way that it was snuck in, though, too, because I still remember when I read, because the thing is you had to read the actual studies. You had to read them. And I still remember having a conversation with Katie going, hold the phone, am I reading this wrong? Like, this has got different ingredients in it, you know. And the thing, nobody says a thing about it. It just quietly goes. And there's been a lot of things that just quietly go by. And we can't allow that stuff to quietly go by. I mean, there's rules, there's regulations, there are things that need to be followed to ensure safety. But not only that, trust and faith.
Oh my God. Yeah. So you got that has just blown my mind. Like, that just brings in so many more questions. Like, why hasn't our media or any journalists asked these questions? Why, what are our other politicians doing that we vote in? Like, I'm just absolutely dumbfounded by what you just said, Katie. I'm absolutely blown out of this water, because the reality is, if they get this stuff across the board, what is this for the future of medicine and our process of approving medicine? But not only that, we're at the moment, the discussion point globally is the treaty, the World Health Organization treaty. And I'm completely floored.
This is where the judicial review is so critical, because this is our process that we have under law to be able to stand with the government in the High Court and say, look, this is our understanding. This is what we know. But why? How did you get to where you got to? You need to have some good justification for us. You know, Katie, I believe I'm correct. One of the new ingredients is a blood pH balancer that they use for people post-heart issues. And that's what they're saying was the preservative. So, you know, I've done quite a bit of science through uni as well. And even I looked at that and scratched my head and went, but shouldn't we still re-examine this and still trial this? Any change, we should trial before we go, hey, let's all do it.
So our jab, just so I'm completely correct and the listeners can hear this, our jab has actually, with the 2 ingredient components, has not had any trial period at all.
Pediatric, not general.
Pediatric.
Certainly at the time that the pharmaceutical company applied for this product to be used in 5 to 11-year-olds in New Zealand, the trial being relied upon was for a different vaccine. There may have been trials since. That's why I'm being cautious with what is said. There might have been trials. In fact, there is a trial going now. They're currently jabbing 5 to 11-year-olds around the world. That's a current trial. That's a phase 3 trial.
Well, we're not supposed to end the trial until this time next year, are we?
No, and then the pharmaceutical company's got another 2 years after that to release the data if it so chooses, and that data may be selective.
They get 2 years after we've all put our kids into the trial to review and assess and tweak. So within that 2 year period, so we're looking at 3 years before we find out what's
correct.
Going on.
May 2025 for the adult version, and I think it's longer for the pediatric, just because that was started much later.
And they didn't want to give us the information that they've only just started releasing as well, so they had to be court ordered to give us that information, right?
Yeah, so what that information pertains to is the information that the FDA received at or about the time that the pharmaceutical companies were seeking the special use approval. So this is not an ordinary class of medicine that we've had before in the world. It's a totally new class of medicine. And this class of medicine was able to get approval without going through all of the processes that are the ordinary processes, the 7, the 10, the 15 years to trial. This got special approval under the guise of an emergency, which was the pandemic, and these are how these new class of drugs have got through in the way that they have got through and why they're being used in this way. So none of this is ordinary.
And the thing is that what we've got, what we haven't spoken to yet, is who our experts are and what they're speaking to. So, this technology has been, around for a wee while, but there are people that were involved in the creation of that are actually trying to warn people that it is not ready for use. Did you want to speak to our experts at all, Katie?
Yeah, sure. So there has been a lot of work done in this area of this using this class of medicine. One of it is for cancer treatments and the like, and it's been investigated for years. It hasn't ever come to market in this way before, because there's been some caution shown that's been necessary for this particular class of medication. And this is just gene-based therapies, which is the new class. We have got and I've had the privilege of working with some of the world-renowned experts in these areas. We have Gert van den Bosch, a lead immunologist, saying kids' innate immunity, this isn't even natural immunity, what they get once they've had the bug, but kids' innate immunity, what they're born with, is their superpower. They are essentially germ-gobbling, snot-leaking monsters that just absolutely absorb every bug in the world. Daycare, they just run permanently sick for months. But they are just essentially the sumps of bugs, and they get them, they spit them out in no time as nothing, and they ride through these bugs very simply. That is their innate immunity. Gert says, let's just rely on that. Let's just use that. We've used it forever. It's their inbuilt cape. It really is. We then have Gert suggesting that the use of these new therapies, particularly in healthy children, could affect their immune systems so that they're not so responsive in the future. Maybe they're turned off or they're turned down. Or, you know, they might not be able to respond to something else in the future, or even a later version of the particular virus that's circulating. We then have Dr. Robert Malone, who is one of the original inventors of this technology, gene-based therapies. And he says, absolutely no way would you use this in children or pregnant women or really anybody. He's really moved to that point, saying this is not a mass vaccination program that you should be doing using this new technology. We looked at it for doing and dealing with cancers, for the way that the product could move through the body utilizing this technology. It's very different. It's not just the case of getting a bit of smallpox injected into your and turning your immune system on yourself. This is, you know, teaching your body or telling your body to do something very differently.
Am I right? He actually has stated he is vaccinated. He did get the first two, didn't he?
Correct. Yeah. Correct.
Yeah.
We then have Byron Bridal, who's in May 2021 reviewed a document that was provided by the pharmaceutical company to the Japanese authorities. And he was essentially being slandered and defamed as the consequence of going public with that document. And here is a university lecturer and public servant that is specialist in the area of public health, immunity, viruses, and he's saying, look, this report's a bit of a concern. It's not just staying in your arm like the governments are saying it is, it's actually going through your body. And this is the document that the pharmaceutical company supplied to the Japanese authorities to suggest that the bio mechanics of it is that it's going through your body, it's not just staying there. Byron is vindicated in March of this year with one of the deliveries of these documents that Serica touched on before, which is the FDA has been required to release a lot of the documents it received at the time, considering to, you know, give this new medicine this approval or the special approval, and these documents are now coming out. So lo and behold, in March, the delivery of, I think it was, oh, it was tens of thousands of documents, the English version of this report comes out, and it's even more damning than the Japanese version. You know, it's got a distinction between male and females, and just how much this medicine goes through the body, where it concentrates, the levels of it increasing over time within a 48-hour period. It's not only incredible, but it's alarming. And there's a suggestion that most of the pharma regulators in around the world received these documents, and there's been a lot of reliance back on by, you know, New Zealand's MedSafe or Australia's Therapeutic Goods Agency saying, oh, but, you know, America accepted it and Great Britain accepted it, so you know, we've just accepted it as well. That's not good enough. It's simply not good enough. More needs to be done, more investigation, more questions. You've got the documents. There's a lot of the information here which should be ringing alarm bells to you.
We didn't vote those people in. We didn't vote Biden. We didn't vote Boris, did we? So,
no, or the governments for that matter.
Exactly.
We then have a number of fantastic vaccinologists that have actually made the vaccines protein-based as opposed to these new classes. Oh, goodness, I could go on forever. We've got, you know, to help us with the numbers, we've got our own Dr. Lally from New Zealand, who's an economist, and he actually just puts the risk and the benefit analysis into numbers for us. You know, sometimes we need to see things in numbers.
You can't fudge numbers, can you? I mean, it is data is data.
Well,
I'm sure you can fudge numbers, but, like, you know, you can't be biased. Sorry, you can fudge them, but you can't be biased. If you've given numbers, you can't take an opinion with them. They are or they aren't.
Well, Dr. Lally's used the Yeah, exactly. Dr. Lally's used the government numbers. And, you know, if you're wanting to go back to that one source of truth, yeah, the numbers speak for themselves and they're screaming. It really is incredible. We've got, Peter McCullough's report on, just the effects of these, of the viruses in children was very powerful. And then, you know, again, the need not to, to treat them or to do anything other than to let them have this naturally was really powerful. And then at the end of the day, I think what they're doing is just simply saying there is enough concern being raised and alarm bells being raised. In even the pharmaceutical company's own material that, you know, you as a pharma regulator that is responsible for our overall health and making decisions on our behalf to be raising these questions. If you haven't raised those questions, we need to know why you haven't raised those questions, and we'd like to know why you haven't raised those questions, or why you have raised those questions and the answers were acceptable.
I'd like to know why, in the interim, it's okay for those regulators to put children at risk.
At the same regulators that were receiving reports back in November that the borders could open in December. Where's the emergency?
I was literally just going to raise that too, because the thing is that everything that you're stating, which is the evidence that's put forward, everything's jumped through different hoops because of this state of emergency. Now, I feel like there should be different qualifications for that, because you could say, arguably, there's still a state of emergency, and I'm not going to state this as factual, it's just an example, a state of an emergency for, say, ages over 65. And so that could be treated as a different version. But I don't feel like we're in a state of emergency for children. So why is that criteria still held?
We hadn't been in a state of emergencies for the 0 to 59s. The government numbers now speak for themselves.
Exactly.
And it was never about, it's, you know, that age cohort, that 0 to 59 are, you know, not the ones that get sick. Pneumonia has been called the old man's friend. It's, you know, when did it become wrong to get sick, to have a couple of days in bed?
I think the one thing that's beneficial about this is that, and there are lots of positives. I don't think our case is meant to be focusing on them. But, I mean, if we want to be grateful for anything, I think the thing is that I think we'd forgotten to take time out when we were sick. You know, kids were going to daycare and to school when they really ought to have been in bed and things like that. And I feel like there's a confusion now. It's like we've gone completely the opposite direction and now kids aren't allowed to go to school with even a slight sniffle. But, you know, it has woken us up and made us sort of come back to the days of when I was a kid. You were sick, you stayed home, you know. Yeah. And that's just... that's just something that's common sense. And I feel like common sense was lost, still kind of lost, to be honest. We love as a human like race to go from one extreme to the other extreme. And hopefully we can be incremental in bringing us back to a balance. And I think that that's what this case is helping to highlight. Is that, okay, we've gone one way, we need to go the other, we've been the other way, and now we need to come back and be logical and rational.
Mm-hmm. Our pendulum swing needs to just come back to sensible. If my Nana was still alive nowadays, I don't think she would have as many bugs as what she had, because there became a complacency with, you know, bringing every germ-riddled child over at the height of their sickness over to meet Nana or catch up with Nana. You know, we've definitely now sort of got a bit more of a appreciation that older people's immunities aren't the best. And so maybe little Timmy with a snotty nose could probably wait a couple of days before going to see Nana. that's where the pendulum, that's where the pendulum needs to get back to, not this insanity of having children in masks at school, where their oxygen deprivation is much greater than the bug could ever be. You know, respecting the fact that bugs come, they've always come. This one just has a new name, and has a fear that's been generated that goes behind it. But if you just look at the numbers on the government website, they just speak volumes. And when you compare them to Sweden, and you're getting exactly the same percentages, you know, it's, were all of these measures worth it?
It's where data is interesting too, isn't it, Katie? Because if you look at comparisons, it's like we keep getting given numbers by governments and media that sounds so scary. But then we seem to forget that this stuff happens with different names, like mm-hmm. flu and all sorts of things. And when you actually look at comparative numbers, comparative mortality, comparative all sorts of things, a lot of countries haven't actually altered that much, or there have actually been worse years for different things. So it's interesting to kind of do a proper analysis about whether we were actually really needing to go into that fear space at all.
Well, I think that that was obvious that we didn't from the start. The Worldometer made clear that we didn't need to from the beginning, but you know.
But people are still very much there. They're still very, very bought into the fact, because you keep getting, it was like our 1 p.m. updates, and we still on the radio get case numbers every single day. And we don't get case numbers for anything else. And I feel like maybe somebody on the radio ought to be going, okay, so we've got X cases of this, but we've got X cases of this too. And suddenly the fear parameter would drop something chronic when you actually realize that, oh, actually, you know, people are also in here for pneumonia or for the flu, or I mean, and then we can go down lines of, you know, the fact that statistics in themselves, well, that's an interesting one, considering the dude that got shot down the road from me was classed as a statistic, because post-mortem it was discovered that he had this illness in his system, but did not die of that. He was shot, but he goes down as a statistic. Now, when you start looking at things like that, I mean, that's another rabbit hole altogether that diverts into a different direction. But it is something that I think needs to be acknowledged, that there is something very strange going on in our media's headspace and in our data recording systems. If we're going to start, we should be looking. I mean, are we going to ask if the dude had STDs and it goes on to, you know, some statistic for STDs? Like, I, you know, it's as ridiculous as that. I don't see, if there is a gunshot victim there, that we should be testing for anything other than, well, what happened, and investigating that.
Yeah, definitely. Look, the numbers are just still well under 1%. I just ran the numbers on Saturday night. Total chance of death for 0 to 59-year-olds, 0.01% on New Zealand's own data documents. That's from or with COVID, because we can't seem to define or get that sorted.
It's interesting talking about numbers, because I've had a message from the health forum this morning, because I wanted to know where they were at. And so you've got your calm reports, which, don't quote me on this because I'm repeating somebody else's information, but it's roughly 170 in terms of deaths. They are not acknowledged deaths. I believe don't quote my accuracy, but I believe we've got 3 acknowledged deaths. But there's 170 reported deaths on calm, but independent reports come back at 435 deaths. Which is there's a big discrepancy there. And those are voluntary reports, let alone the fact that if you look on MedSafe's CALM database, you're looking at over, 63,000 reports of injury in total. That's not insignificant. And it doesn't seem to be acknowledged. And drugs have been pulled for far less in the past. And we are a little country. I don't know that we would have ever experienced such statistics. And then you've also got to acknowledge the fact that it's a passive reporting system. So it's incredibly inaccurate. Both of them, a lot of people don't know about the health forum, and most people don't know to report injury to CALM either. So goodness knows what the actual statistics would actually be should we be accurate.
CALM, I think, itself admits that there is a between only a 5 to 10% reporting of adverse events. Yeah. So that means, you know, 90% aren't reported. Mm-hmm. And then the analysis suggests that in the pre-COVID childhood vaccines, or not even just childhood vaccines, including the flu and things, the flu vaccine, we've got, you know, a 5,000% increase in adverse events being reported to MedSafe and CALM in the last, or since, you know, February 2021.
So awareness is growing.
Not awareness, the adverse events are growing.
Right.
Huh. So we've got 5,000, let's assume that we've still just got a 90% under-reporting amount. There are now 5,000 adverse events that have been reported for the jab since February 2021 to what we had for historic vaccines. A 5,000% increase in adverse reports. And this is the same organisation that approved the jab in our 5 to 11-year-olds.
And this is why, you know, to be in the High Court, to have honest, open, frank conversations, questions, and request information is critical, because we've got safety signals now that aren't just the bells dinging, they're literally sirens starting to scream at us.
They were screaming back in December. We had 2 confirmed deaths in December at the time that this jab was approved for 5 to 11-year-olds for a virus that the government itself said children were at, you know, nil chance of, you know, dying from this. So, you know, we need to, these are just the questions. Why?
We also need to raise this too, because the thing is that right now approval is underway where it's at, and it's scary what the FDA is actually saying about whether they will approve and the criteria that they will approve it for. But the under fives are going to start being looked at, or they are being looked at. And so, now it's our responsibility to start saying something now, because the thing is that, you know, it was a difficult argument with 12 to 15-year-olds when they can actually technically, according to the government, give informed consent for themselves. Once you get to 5 to 11, well, they can't. And it is our responsibility now to start jumping up and down and yelling no. And we also need to, like, under 5, don't even get me started about their underdeveloped immune system and things like that and what you could be risking.
Their developed immune system.
Exactly. But, you know, it's our responsibility to start speaking out now, and we need that support. So we do need help with funding for that, because the thing is that we're trying to protect the future. I mean, we don't know. They have not even studied the fertility and the carcinogenicity of all of these things. So they're not even claiming to have done that yet. So they can't speak to it because they haven't done it. So...
Why? I think you'll find, Sirica, there was a document that came out in the May delivery. That's heading down that path of what they did know about the jab with pregnant women. I will inform you of that one later if you need.
Okay, cool.
It's definitely, you're so right.
It's quite interesting. You've got to read the numbers quite broadly and look at them. What was missing and who was missing from their data and how many.
Yeah.
We just have to protect our children, basically. I mean, regardless of what was known, what wasn't known, the overall outcome is that we don't know enough.
No, we don't.
And it, whether they knew or didn't know, it's even more alarming when they do know, obviously, because then it's a conscious decision to inflict possible harm. Even if they don't have the information, the point is that you don't risk children. You just don't, especially when you're talking about potentially rolling it out to now coming up babies. You know, that's unfathomable to me. I just, I can't get okay with that.
Yes, and so that's the context for that, though, is Moderna has applied for an application to the FDA for emergency use of its product in 6 months to five-year-olds. That hasn't been approved yet. That's in the States. This is not a situation that's happened in New Zealand as of yet.
No.
But, you know, they've got their sights firmly on, you know, the next age cohort.
Yeah, sorry if I wasn't clear. I was saying this is something that we want to do now before, so we can prevent it even going there.
Exactly right.
Is we need to build awareness, because we shouldn't even be, we shouldn't really have be in the position where we're having to argue this. We don't want to be there to argue the next phase. We just want to avoid that completely. And I believe I read that the FDA is not even going to require a 50%. There's usually a threshold of over 50% efficacy, I believe, something to do with that. And they're not even going to require that as a threshold. Don't quote me on that, but there's just all sorts of rule bending that I don't quite understand why.
And I don't think you'll find the public know that we're having this rule bending occur, because the assumption is made that we have the likes of MedSafe in place to be our moderator, to be our protector, to make sure that we are cautious in what we do and what risks we take. Not once have we had our government say to us, look, we've approved this, but here's what we don't know yet.
Listen to the name.
Change.
MedSafe.
Yeah. Yeah. If parents knew what we don't know yet, I think a lot of parents would start to question them more if they hadn't already.
Well, I didn't.
Mm. Yeah.
I didn't know what Katie said about the two ingredients. And I'm just sitting here going, how the hell can that even happen? Like, how logistically can that even happen? And why aren't we asking more questions? And why isn't our media asking questions? And why isn't the opposition asking questions? And for me personally, I kind of go, you know what? MedSafe, they're here to protect us as individuals. They're here to do a job for us as paid citizens of this country. And that for me is just now red flag, warning bell, absolutely not okay.
Yep, and that's the questions. Those are the questions that have been silenced. Those are the questions that we're asking of our government now, because they've refused to answer us to date.
I mean, and we have asked.
Yeah, we've spent hours and hours and hours. There's been so many official information requests that have gone to various governmental departments asking questions, asking for information. You know, as we mentioned before, some of them send you on the roundabout where you feel like you're in circles with nothing definitive. Others have been very useful. But you know, it's sad that we're in a time where we've got to dig like this in order to get real transparency. We're in a democracy.
I'm just wondering if listeners can see, can feel facial expressions there.
Yeah, I hope so. Another thing that was interesting too is, you know, when I wrote to the child commissioner and said, yo, are you aware of this, and are you aware of this, and are you aware of this study, or are you aware of this document from this pharmaceutical company? They didn't know. Oh, we just rely on the Ministry of Health. Well, I'm sorry, Child Commissioner, your job is to protect our children, and why are you not asking these questions? Because there has been enough of an underlying rumble for people to stand up. This isn't just as the, you know, an anti-vax definition or label. There has been enough of a rumble for people to be on alert, to think to themselves, there's something out of the ordinary here. And an Office of Child Commissioner not even knowing about these key documents is you know, alarming.
I think it's also a reminder too that, and this comes back to bravery and standing up and speaking out, is that it doesn't matter if you are one person, you know, or a small group. I mean, when we started this, our media release contained information about the WHO and the fact that at the time of the rollout, or the approval and the announcement of the rollout, the WHO said there was insufficient data to support the vaccination of under 12-year-olds. Mm. Now, little old us with our little court case was sort of going, well, hang on, you do realise that this says this, and that was in our media release. And for a while it was really addressed. And again, we kind of went back and poached the media and said, but I think this is public interest. I really think you need to be dealing with this. And I'm going to cut the long story very short. Suddenly there was headlines saying that the New Zealand government was challenging WHO on their stance. And I think, I don't quote me, it was within a week maybe, suddenly the website had changed. Now, that could have happened for all sorts of different reasons, but there's a little tiny group of people questioning and making a little bit of a, you know, wave. And that little tiny statement highlighted something for a lot of people. Now, even if only a small percentage of New Zealanders even noticed, some did. And they went, well, hold the phone. You know, that's a bit odd. They change it after we've already kind of agreed upon, you know, accepted that we were rolling this out. The thing is that it only takes one or two people to make a big difference. But imagine what we can do when we band together. And that's what the Hood's trying to do with this case, is trying to encourage people to band together as well, to really wake the government up and say, well, hang on, you know, people are asking questions. Don't ignore us. We aren't just a couple of people. We are growing, and you need to address these questions. But even if we are only a couple of people, we still deserve those answers. And you can make a change. You can make a difference if you're only one or two people and you just tell one or two people what you know, or express your concerns. You can start really good conversations, and you can start making people think. And that's a really good thing, especially when it's talking about children. And I think it's really important to wake up the our representatives and remind them that they are working for all of us.
And certainly when we filed in January the initial part of our case, that was the first time we actually got some answers. So I am very looking forward to seeing what responses we're going to get at the end of this month from the government and what they have to say now.
So just to clarify that, Katie, so at the moment we've filed all of the updated reports. We are awaiting
for the applicants, so for the eight parents that we support bringing this case.
Okay, and
we filed our evidence, and the Crown has the opportunity to file responsive evidence, and that's due in early June. And then we've got a week to reply, and then we're into our hearing. And you know, we've received the you know, key documents that we've been asking for some time. We've received you know, MedSafe's answer is, you know, as to why it says that it was not perturbed by the vaccine provided, or the clinical trial provided being different to the one that was ultimately approved. You know, we're starting to get those answers, but we'd never got those answers when it was just one or two of us writing letters. We've had to go to court. We've had to put the spotlight on them, and that's the only way that we've been able to do it. And we're asking these questions for all the parents out there that are asking the questions.
And all the grandparents and all the aunties and uncles and just our future generations.
So, ladies, you're heading to the High Court? correct? The 25th?
27th and 28th.
27th, 28th. If people listening to this would like to donate money, where do they go? How do they find you? How do they connect? How do they find out the information from the High Court? Because can they access the High Court as a citizen of New Zealand on a Zoom link?
We'll be able to find out whether or not they can, whether or not there'll be open court Zoom link made available. Mm-hmm. At this point in time, to protect the parents' identity, we have sought and obtained anonymity orders so that our 8 parents and their families can feel that they can bring this case without
discrimination,
retribution, hate mail, all of those things that go with it. So certainly for our interim hearing, there was a closed courtroom to protect their interests because we were talking about that anonymity order. I suspect that the court will be open live stream on the 27th and the 28th of June, and that will be certainly announced on the HOARD website if that is available. But we're keeping everybody up to date with regular weekly updates where material stages and things happen.
So we've got social media. So we're on Telegram, Facebook, and on Instagram. And we also have our website, which is www.thehoodnz.com. Just make note that that is a .com. And there is a donate button up there, which makes it very, very easy to donate. There is the possibility to email us if you want to go straight into the bank account or whatnot, especially for larger donations. And you can email us on info@thehoodnz.com. Sorry, thehoodnz.com. And we can facilitate that via that mode. But the easiest way to do it is just on the donation button on our website.
Awesome. Yeah. And we do unashamedly actually have to ask and raise, this whole thing is community funded.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, for this debate to occur, for those 2 days in court to happen in the end of June, we've got to financially be able to get this over the line. So we have to unashamedly actually stand out here and ask if those that can, mm-hmm. could or will help. Mm-hmm. You know, even, you know, some can only give $5, some mm-hmm. could only give $2. That's absolutely perfect. It is better than us receiving nothing, because if everybody chips in and does just a little of what they can, if they can, then that's gonna help no end. Because I think it's so, so important for all Kiwis to have the opportunity to have a transparent government and to have answers and to have information.
Yeah, and our charitable status is in progress at the moment too. So if the bigger companies want to sort of piggyback on that side of things, just give us an email and we can let you know as soon as we are over the line with that, because obviously that gives you the tax benefits of a charity and whatnot as well. So that is in process.
Totally.
And the money goes towards our filing fees, our preparation of our court book, which will be large because it's, you know, there's a lot of people, paper, and a lot of people have got a lot of things to say. It's for our legal counsel, our QC, and our solicitors. You know, that's where the money goes. It's for the court case, and you know, it's not for Serica or Nicola or I sitting here. It is for the court case. And that's, we're getting answers, and we will continue to fight to get more answers.
Yeah.
You girls have blown my mind today. I just want you to know that. And it takes so much bravery and courage just to stand up and ask questions from a system that isn't prepared to deliver it at the moment. And so, you know, just thank you. As in one mother to another mother, to just thank you for your time. Thank you for coming on. Thank you for being brave enough to step out and ask questions when we're in a culture right now that's a cancel culture.
Mm.
And that's, you know, easier to label people than actually have open debate and become curious. So massive big heart out to you ladies, because I know that this would not be easy work. And thank you so much for sharing your stories and journey.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah.
Does anyone want a final message to a listener that might be sitting there pondering everything that we've discussed today?
We're just everyday New Zealanders, honestly. We, whether we're all in this in New Zealand or not, I mean, to be honest, we're just people, and you know, we're no different to you or, you know, your family. We just want the best for ours. There's no judgment here either. Like, I have friends who've made different decisions to myself, and that is absolutely fine. There is no judgment here for something that you disagree with, or, you know, we don't have to agree. You know, we just need to be able to discuss in comfort and without judgment. I'm not going to say anything awful to somebody just because they've made a different decision to me. And I don't expect that in return. So, yeah, we're just kind of humble Kiwis, nothing special about us other than we've kind of had enough and we feel that there's something we need to do.
Thank you. Awesome. That was